Thank you, Kim, and happy Thursday, everyone. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Hansen, filling in for Steve Bertrand. You can follow me on Twitter, at John, that's J-O-N, the Cubs fan. Call us or give us a text, 312-981-7200. Got a packed show today. We're going to be talking about Krispy Kreme towards the end of the show. They're coming back to Chicago. Elise Glink from BestMoneyMoves.com going to be talking about sponsorships and celebrities and how much of a risk that is. We've got Bill Geiger in as well. But first, we're going to start off with Ian Schur, the writer at CNET. And Ian, thanks for joining me, even though Steve's not here today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Now, we're going to get to Facebook censoring your posts and self-driving taxis. But first, I've got to ask you. I saw this article. We're not talking about this today, but this headline caught my eye. Giant butt-shaped aircraft crashes because butts weren't meant to fly. And I got to ask you, Ian, did you write that headline or did one of your...
I did, yes.
You did.
I'm going to take credit for that headline, yes.
You've taken the...
That's what you call late on a Wednesday. That's what it is.
So, yeah, that's a great tease and a good reason for people to go to CNET.com and find out what that's all about. But let's shift gears a little bit to Facebook censoring your posts. You know, I think sometimes when we use social media, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think people somehow feel that that falls under the purview of the First Amendment, the freedom of speech. Of course, it's a private company, though, and in many ways, they do find opportunities to censor us, right?
Right. So I think a lot of people forget that Congress shall make no law means Congress and not Mark Zuckerberg. So what's interesting about all of this, and the reason that we at CNET wrote this story, was that in the last few months, we've seen these incredible moments where you've had some really dramatic things happening on Facebook. You had Corinne Gaines in Baltimore, who earlier this month had a standoff with police, and she put videos on Facebook about it. And what was really fascinating is that Facebook shut off her account in the middle of it. Now, there were reasons for it, one of them being that her friends were actually urging her to not acquiesce and possibly shoot the officers. So there was a safety thing going on. But there are other situations as well. For example, you remember Philando Castile, mm-hmm. who his fiancée live streamed the minutes after he was shot by a policeman and as he died in the car next to her. There was the Dallas shootings that happened a couple of days later. All these things have brought up a lot of interesting issues around censorship, because Facebook in each one of these has done very weird things. Like, they took down the video initially of Philando Castile. Then they brought it back up and put a warning that there was sensitive information and kind of graphic imagery behind it. And so what we wanted to do at CNET was really explain to you how Facebook's censorship machine works, because it's a really interesting thing. And of course, if you go to Facebook, it's incredibly confusing,
right,
and hard to understand. So we really tried to write it all in English and make it easy to understand.
Is it confusing for probably Facebook as well, just because we're talking about Facebook Live, we're talking about things that can't run up the chain at Facebook and back down, that split decisions have to be made by, are they made by humans? Are they made by computers? How does that work?
Well, that's the thing, is that some of it is humans and some of it is computers. So in Philando Castile's case, Facebook actually blamed the computer for this. Now the computer can't defend itself. But, you know, in these other instances, for example, with Facebook Live, which is the live streaming stuff, right? I pull out my phone, I tap the app, and I start live streaming to the world. Facebook's actually considering, and that's one of the little nuggets in here, to actually start having people watch from its company a really popular Facebook live stream. So let's say that people knew Philando Castile was happening in real time and went to it and were watching it and not afterward. That Facebook would actually be able to monitor that and decide, okay, we need to take this down, or we need to do something to make sure that it's following our community standards. And that's the thing. They have a list of community standards around stuff like nudity and and racist speech and all these other things, terrorism. And those types of things are how they try to apply across all of Facebook. But you have to remember, Facebook's at 1.7 billion people every month.
Right.
It's larger than any country on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so having, you know, it's hard enough to write laws in this country. And that's only 320 million of us, right?
And to watch it in real time, yeah.
Right, exactly. And so it's, you have to think about how incredibly tough this job is that Facebook has, but they put themselves in this position, right? They have chosen to have these rules, and they are trying to apply them across every country on the planet. It's really fascinating.
I couldn't believe the high number of requests that they get from law enforcement regarding it. What did you say, 20,000?
Yeah, that was just in a 6-month period. So it wasn't even that much time. And so, yes, they get a lot of requests. Some of them are related to stuff like national security, right? Which Facebook said between zero and 500 of them were through national security. That's the best they could get a lawyer to allow them to say. But the rest of them are all police related, right? And you have to imagine some of these are related to drug crimes and all sorts of other stuff. But there's also some really fascinating other issues, like when we had stuff like Corinne Gaines, where the police went to Facebook in real time as the standoff was happening and said, hey, take down her account, please. And Facebook agreed. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting thing, right? Because you have to think about on the other end of this, okay, I totally can understand if you have an issue like police and safety and lives, but let's imagine a political uprising.
Yeah.
Let's imagine issues where these are things that suddenly a Facebook person's decisions and choices matter, right? And maybe they agree or disagree with the political uprising. What happens then? These are the types of things that are really hard questions that are not that clear.
So in many ways, Facebook, although not protected under First Amendment rights of free speech, we have many of the same sort of similar discussions around the First Amendment. I want to get to the story about the self-driving taxis in Singapore, that they're going to be trying these. There's still going to be an engineer in the car as they try them in a very specific area on a limited basis. But what really stuck out of my story is I had no idea that they're going to be trying this in Pittsburgh. Uber is. They beat them Uber to the punch a little bit.
Yeah, so Uber announced a little while ago that they were going to be having self-driving taxis in Pittsburgh, again, with people behind the wheels, thank God for now. And so, but they're going to be, what's interesting is that you've got this kind of, everyone's rushing quickly all of a sudden. It feels like in the last couple of months, it's really heated up that people are trying to get these self-driving cars on the road. And it's really interesting because, yeah, I mean, Uber has talked a lot about how they think that the future for them is self-driving stuff, right? And the people who have jobs through Uber, they've already gotten their notice in a way, right? As soon as they can get a self-driving car on the road, of course it's safer and it's going to be cheaper to operate. And so Uber's going to go that direction. But in the meantime, they're giving people jobs, they say. It's interesting to see all these people fighting over who's going to be first on the road and how fast can they get it there and how well can they do it.
I imagine that'll be an interesting discussion politically, too, because like you said, Uber kind of says that we're not killing jobs. We're giving opportunities to people to make a little extra cash. Oh, by the way, we're trying to get rid of them and have self-driving cars. It's an interesting discussion. It continues at CNET. Ian, thank you. We have so much more to chat about, but we don't have the time right now. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And you'll be back with Steve next week. Ian Schur, writer at CNET. Head to CNET.com for more information. 720 WGN. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen here, filling in for Steve Bertrand. You can follow me on Twitter at John, J-O-N, the Cubs fan. Give us a call. Send us a text, 312-981-7200. We'd absolutely love to hear from you at any point in time. Steve was moving his youngest into college yesterday, I believe. I still think they're finishing that transition. But I believe Steve will be back tomorrow. A little bit later in the show, we're going to talk with Elise Glink from BestMoneyMoves.com. She joins Steve every single week, and I'm happy she's going to be joining us again. And we're going to be talking about the fascinating world of corporate sponsorship, right? I mean, we see this all the time. So many athletes are sponsors now, or spokespeople for sponsorships, and actors and actresses. But what happens when they get into trouble, when things go wrong? How much vetting goes into that sort of sponsorship and that sort of spokesperson relationship? So that'll be an interesting thing to dive in with Elise. And she has a really fascinating theory. I don't know if I subscribe to it completely, and I'm curious if you guys will as well. She has a theory that, obviously, we're talking about the Ryan Lochte case and the four sponsors that dropped him. She has a fascinating theory about one very prominent Olympian who you'll know the name of. The theory is that this Olympian actually came back to the Games this year to compete in part to kind of cement his relationship as a good spokesperson. This person may have had some trouble in the past, but that she thinks that he came back, one of the reasons at least, was to cement that relationship with potential sponsors in the future. So we're going to talk with Elise Glink from BestMoneyMoves.com in just a little bit. But right now, Carlos Larcada, I can almost smell the donuts that you've brought in here. You're talking about Krispy Kreme today.
Krispy Kreme donuts, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So I got to ask, I got to admit some naivety on this. I went to Krispy Kreme when I was younger in Downers Grove, and I just assumed that they were here the whole time. But you say maybe they had gone away for a bit, but they're back.
They are back.
All right.
We will be back.
Okay.
Our first store will open in November. It's been about 7 years since Krispy Kreme left the market, and, you know, we're excited to bring the magic back.
Yeah, so what prompted the move back? Obviously, the Chicago market loves our breakfast treats, and we love to get a little extra sugar in the morning. I bet there was a demand for it. I bet people were asking, where is it? We want it.
Sure, you know, and I really don't understand why, you know, they went away to begin with. You know, there were busy stores, and, you know, the demand for Krispy Kreme donuts really never went away. They're still available at, you know, the local Jewel Osco's and Walmart's, and the group that I work for, you know, saw the opportunity in the Chicagoland market, and it was available, and, you know, we said, hey, let's give it a shot. So we're signed on for 8 shops in Cook County, and, you know, we're hoping to expand into the surrounding counties, too.
I bet people are pretty excited about that. You know, what's interesting is I, as part of my other job on morning TV at over at WCIU, I go to a lot of local bakeries in the morning to chat about their donuts, and they've got all sorts of great creations. Some of them are a little bit more absurd than others, putting Twix bars on donuts and stuff like that, and that's all well and good. Are you guys sticking with the folks at Krispy Kreme, are they sticking with the basics, or are they going to have some interesting selections to offer?
So we stick to the basics. You know, I like to say that I'll put a Krispy Kreme donut in front of anybody else, and we'll compete. You know, it's fresh, it's hot, it's off the line. You know, we're constantly making them all day long. And sure, we may not put a piece of caramelized bacon on top of it, but in my opinion, it tastes great, and the price is right, and it's a family experience in the store.
Well, that's what I think, is that you know what you're going to get at Krispy Kreme. Although I got to say, I can, you know, some donuts I can eat like 10 of them, and Krispy Kreme, no one should probably eat 10 donuts at any sitting. I imagine that's not advocated, but it's such a unique taste, and it's a sweet taste too when you get that thing that I usually can stop at 2 and feel satiated, which is probably a good thing.
I'd say you're in the minority. I think I think a lot of people don't stop at 2.
Really?
Absolutely. You know,
I see some of them walking here on Michigan Avenue, in fact.
I came in with 8 dozen for you all, and I almost got accosted on the way in.
People were stopping you on your way in. Every business, it seems these days, in the food industry has an app, something really easy so that people can really quickly order something if they need it. And Krispy Kreme is no exception. The Hot Light is the mobile app.
That's right. It's Krispy Kreme Rewards. It features the Hot Light app on it. And you set your favorite store, and it actually tells you when the Hot Light is on at your favorite store or any store in the country, really.
Really?
So now you don't have to pass by the store. You know when it's on. You can, you know, grab your kids, grab your wife, and car and go.
So the Hot Light means that they've got the freshest donuts there are right at that moment?
So donuts are always coming off the line. Right. And I tell people
I think we watch that. They go through the conveyor belts, if I remember correctly.
Absolutely. And I tell people to get whatever it is that's coming off the line when they happen to go in. When the light is on, the original glazed donuts are coming off.
Oh, that sounds really
good.
And
that's what Krispy Kreme's known for, and we're excited to bring it back to Chicagoland.
So turn on those push notifications is what you're saying.
That's right.
Krispy Kreme app. Don't let it sit there idly by. You got to make sure that thing's at the forefront. Okay, so Krispy Kreme is going to return to Chicagoland. It's at 17815 South Halsted Street in Homewood, Illinois, and that's coming back in November 2016. Do we know when the other ones are going to be coming through?
I've got some sites in the works.
You can't tell us?
I can't tell you yet, but we're looking to open them in April and June of next year.
Everyone else besides Homewood now is, they want to know. You got them on the seat on the edge of their seats.
I've gotten a lot of calls since this press release went out.
Carlos, the president of Chicagoland Restaurants, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right. Yeah, absolutely. More on the Wintrust Business Lunch coming up in just a few minutes on 720 WGN. So Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I'm John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand. He's taking his kid to college yesterday and recovering from that. My Twitter handle is at John, J-O-N, the Cubs fan. Every week, Elise Glink from BestMoneyMoves.com joins in on the show. In fact, she co-hosts. Everyone knows Elise Glink, and I'm so happy to chat with you, Elise. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, happy to be here.
You know what? The best thing is we get to talk even longer today.
I know. Oh, we love that.
I know. We get as much time as we need here. In fact, I want to open it up to the phone lines, 312-981-7200. You can text. You can call in. We're going to take any questions you want a little bit later in the show about marketing, anything along those lines. Elise obviously can answer any of those, and I'll try and jump along for the ride. But we want to talk about Ryan Lochte to start things off and open up a broader discussion, Elise, about sponsorships and spokespeople that are often, you know, celebrities and athletes. And immediately, as soon as Ryan Lochte came back to the United States and all these details came out from what happened in Rio, man, they are these companies now are really quick to drop these figures when anything goes wrong.
So it's interesting. interesting, right? He's just the latest example of this, but let's just take it from a 50,000-foot level. If you're a company, you're constantly looking for somebody who can represent the face of your brand or maybe the essence of what your brand is. And for a lot of companies, particularly companies in, you know, the apparel industry or sportswear industry as a natural fit, alcohol industry, using celebrity endorsers is a big thing, right? You're finding people to hitch your brand to. The biggest example of that would be Nike, right? Because they get all the top athletes in each of the different things, and not only do they become endorsements, but they all also help design, like Michael Jordan, whole line of shoes.
Right, they're part of the process.
They become part of the process, and they become really entwined with the brand. And there are some dangers involved with that for companies. And clearly, Ryan Lochte is just the latest example of it. But if you think about Michael Phelps, right, we had that as well. You know, he was great, most decorated Olympian, and then there's pictures of him smoking what looks like a bong in London, the drunk driving thing.
Right.
Suddenly his brand was tarnished. And so you know, with Ryan Lochte, we saw, to your point, man, lightning fast.
Yeah,
four companies dropped him.
I don't know if it used to be slower, or maybe just word traveled slower. We're such an instantaneous age now in terms of social media that and the reactions can spread so fast that companies really got to move fast. I want to ask about the Michael Phelps thing really quickly because I teased this. And you sort of mentioned that maybe, you know, obviously he's an athlete in his prime still and obviously still able to compete clearly as exhibited in Rio. But you have the theory that maybe part of it, maybe a sliver of his reason to race again here in 2016 was that he can kind of shore up that image and have a lasting impact now for sponsorships moving forward now that he's kind of rebranded himself as this all-American guy again.
Well, I think rehabbing yourself is part of the great American story, right? If you think about everybody who's sort of fallen off whatever wagon they were on, and then they have found a way to kind of rehabilitate their image in the minds of people, and then they come back. And they come back either in the same or even in a slightly different way. And I think that that's a perfectly wonderful American story. And it's kind of unique in what we do here. But, yeah, I wonder, you know, if one of the reasons that Michael Phelps put him through all this, himself through the admittedly ridiculously difficult training that he did and came back to incredible performance of greatness, was to make that the last image that we remember, because there was no discussion at the end of this Olympics about how he was going to maybe come back in Tokyo, right?
No.
It was like, I am done. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm going to go to my new house, and I'm going to swim in my pool with my baby.
But I can't blame him for if that was part of the motivation, only because in athletics, and especially Olympians, your window of success to cement yourself as a legacy is very small, and then you're done. I mean, at least in football and baseball, you can go into your late 30s and 40s, and some of the sports, and golf especially. But in Olympics, you need to cement that image really quickly if it's going to have any lasting impact for a long time.
You do, but the larger issue, you know, taking it away from the Olympics for a moment, the larger issue that I think companies need to be thinking about is hitching their brand to something that's fallible. And it isn't really as much about whether we're talking specifically about whether Ryan Lochte can come back or not, or whether what was Michael Phelps' real motivation. The question for brands and for businesses is, who do you pick to be that spokesperson, and what happens when something happens? What is the risk something's going to happen? So we've had a number of clients over the years at ThinkLink Media where they'll say, we want to make videos with this guy, he's the president, or he's the head of the product, or, you know, this woman, and they're all part and parcel of the company, or we want to do something with, you know, a celebrity. And the question you have to ask yourself is, what is the danger? What is the risk that that person is either going to leave? The most obvious thing, right? People rarely stay at companies for 10, 20, 30 years.
Right.
And when no media goes away, video is always available, whatever you've written is always available, what happens if that person does have a fall or does get into a situation that's not as good for the company? And how does that potentially put the company at risk and the company's brand at risk? And so when you're thinking about brand endorsements, whether they're celebrity or you're using somebody within the company, how do you deal with that? So another one that we actually worked with, they used the president of their company, and they created a whole bunch of videos around what was the topic of the company, one thing in the financial services area, which was great, and then the guy left the company.
Right.
And there were all these videos with thousands and thousands of views that were all integrally placed into the written content on the site that you didn't actually want to get rid of.
Right.
Because you had links associated with that. So from a search engine optimization point of view, it was pretty strong. On the other hand, the guy wasn't with the company anymore.
I was just going to say, the CEO of Walmart is all over the airways now talking about how well they treat workers, and he has that Instagram account. I don't know if you've seen that video, and his name escapes me at the moment. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you know, he could be let go or leave on his own, and then there's that brand that you've built up, and it's gone.
That's right. And so how is a company you deal with the endorsement issue? And because somebody has to be the face of a company, or how do you make the product itself the face? This is why we have Tony the Tiger, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Tony, he would never do anything bad. Exactly. He's a cartoon character. Yeah, you're not going to see Tony the Tiger smoking a bong, because he can't.
No, but if you think about it, with there's an insurance company that had a voice of an animated character, that the guy behind the voice got into a little bit of trouble, and they had to replace the voice. And so this issue of risk is the one that I really want companies to think about as they're starting to map out the strategy, because you really always have to know what's the worst thing that could possibly happen and how do you plan for that as an eventuality. And if it never happens, you never have to take that crisis plan off the shelf, but you do want to think about it going in.
Elise Glink, writer at bestmoneymoves.com. You can follow her on Twitter. I think it's just at Glink, right?
It's just at Glink. My first name is so hard to spell, John. I just tried to make it really simple. Glink.
You were the first Glink on Twitter. That's really nice. Congratulations. I wanted to ask before we take a quick break. Oh, and I want to remind people, you want to call us or text, got a question for Elise, call us at 312-981-7200. Text is the same number. Before we go to break really quickly, I wonder if you could give us a window into the world of how people choose those sponsors. Not only how they choose them, but is there a vetting process? Like when we choose our vice presidential potentials, there's an extensive vetting process. They talk to family. They talk to friends. Do you know if that sort of thing happens when they're trying to pick a spokesperson?
I got to tell you, I think it doesn't happen enough. I think you go, so for example, with the Olympics, right, you've got, and this has just happened so fast, Usain Bolt, right? So here he is, the guy gets 9 gold medals in a row, 3, 3, and 3 over 3 different Olympics. And everybody, you know, the guy's worth about $30 million, according to Wikipedia. I didn't make up that number, they did. But so he's already worth a lot of money. And the first thing you imagine is that everybody's going to go on to him because he's the latest, hottest thing again, coming out, fastest thing, right, coming out. Plus, he's got an awesome name for somebody who's a sprinter, right?
Right.
And then he turns around, and the next thing we know, all over Instagram and Snapchat and Daily News, Daily Mail, and everywhere, is that, you know, he's got quite the ladies' man reputation.
Right.
And so you've got this kind of, you know, immediate, like, oh, this guy's going to be the next big thing. And then you've got this other thing. How do you vet that out? And I would bet if you looked back at past Olympics, I'm using him as an example, you would have probably, had you been looking for it, seen that this might have been a repetitive thing that he does, mm-hmm. right? That he goes out and he's a ladies' man. He's not, I don't believe he's married, but as an endorsement, you want to have a certain image with brands, and that endorsement might be perfect for some brands and not so perfect for others. Digging into the past more than 5 minutes, I think, is the first thing that companies need to do when they're thinking about hiring a celebrity endorser, and what is, you know, because the past here will inform the future.
Right, and you mentioned Usain Bolt and his virility, I guess we could say, and how that wouldn't, you know, for some sponsors that doesn't care, and the dichotomy of, well, he's a man, so people seem not to care as much of that as if he was a woman. And there's a whole another discussion that we could jump into. And luckily, we're going to have a little time to do that. At least we're going to take a quick break. You'll stick around, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to 720 WGN. Thanks, Oregon. Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. I'm John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand. Continuing on with Elise Glink of bestmoneymoves.com. Give us a call or text 312-981-7200 if you have any questions for Elise. All right, Elise, we've been talking about sponsorships, and we went away from the Olympics, and I'm going to go back just for 1 second as a way into another part of this conversation. I don't know if you're familiar with the story of Kim Rhode. She was the American athlete at the Olympics. She's one of the highest medal count winners ever, but her event is shooting, And there was an article, I don't quite remember where I read it, about that she wasn't getting any sponsorship deals because she had spoke at the Republican convention in 2012. She's a member of the NRA. And I wanted to ask you, you know, we talk about drinking as a problem or getting into deep trouble for smoking pot or something, but someone's political views now seem to enter that arena of a dangerous place for some corporations to have as a sponsor or a spokesperson.
I think we've become such a polarized society that that's exactly the problem. And it's one of those dangers that you have to think about when you're, you know, thinking about a celebrity endorser. Somebody like Kim Rhode, who's, you know, obviously a tremendously talented gun enthusiast, you know, a gun shooter. I don't know what you would call that. That's not the kind of thing that, again, some companies want to have on there because they know that that's going to be deeply polarizing. And then other companies are going to think that that's like the best thing since sliced bread. So it's really, again, looking into an endorser's past and what they have done in the past is a very good predictor of what they might do in the future. And you really have to go deep.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask because, you know, I don't know if this changes with the newer generation, with millennials as they come of age and grow up a little bit more. Is, you know, because personally for me, maybe I do and I don't even know it. Celebrity sponsorship matters nothing to me. At least I don't think it does. Do we see a trend of that at all? Or is celebrity sponsorship and ambassadorship just as important now as it ever was?
Well, don't tell the marketing companies that, you know, a guaranteed rate that just paid, you know, gosh knows how many millions of dollars for what I'll always call Comiskey Park. You know, endorsements are a big business in this world, and there's a lot of marketing dollars, billions, that get thrown behind it. I think that there are some endorsers that are like lightning in a jar, right? When you attach somebody to something, that becomes more known. There's more things that are written about it. And so, for example, I had a friend who used to run she was the CMO, chief marketing officer for a shopping center company, and they hired one of the Kardashians, not Kim, but somebody else, to go to one of their openings out in the West Coast. And she said, whatever the investment was that they paid them, you know, let's just make up a number.
Okay.
You know, it was tens of thousands of dollars, right? Okay. But they got, not only did they get thousands and thousands of people to come to the actual store and the event and the shopping mall, whatever it was, but there was so much publicity that went on behind the scenes that she said the ROI she thought was a really good ROI because they had all of this publicity that came out of the event, but then they also had all the people show up, and that was good too. So there are some endorsers and celebrities that you can hire that will really make or break something.
Yeah, I guess it just is specializing the right person for the right company. And also, you mentioned the Kardashian. I mean, the Kardashians, they're all over social media. So, you know,
there's so many of them.
There's just so
but
many.
But here's a good example, right? So there are like five sisters or four sisters, and each one seems to have a different kind of an expertise, right? The one who's the model, and I get this confused, and my apologies to the greater Kardashian mom.
They are listening now, too, so all four of the sisters.
They all are, right? Mm-hmm. On social. But but some of them you would pick for certain things, and some you would pick for other things, and I think understanding, you know, how they've sliced and diced the market is a great example of how it's not really one size fits all. The best fit could be different for a different event, even within, you know, the same sort of company or the same sort of grouping of companies. And we've seen this, you know, throughout the line. If you look at a Cindy Crawford, for example, who's just been a stupendous model, but she has reinvented herself across the line in so many different ways. Different pieces of her are better for different kinds of endorsements than others. And this goes for non-such celebrities, but people who might be business celebrities. Think about the Shark Tank people and Barbara Corcoran, who made her name at building a great real estate company, the Corcoran Group, sold it for $60 million, and has then went out to decided she was going to become a TV star and has landed as an entrepreneur. Her brand would be perfect for so many things, but maybe not so perfect if she was pitching, say, mouthwash.
Right. And, you know, you brought up earlier about sponsorship versus kind of an ambassador of something. And I, you know, the role of a spokesperson has changed. It's no longer a TV commercial, someone holding up a glass of orange juice and saying, drink orange juice. It's someone getting involved in the product. And I imagine that plays into how we are changing with marketing and advertising, with native advertising, the idea that you find people that really are enthusiastic or contribute to the product. And it just makes it come off a little bit more genuine.
Well, I think there's authenticity is a really interesting issue. So if you know that, you know, Barbara Corcoran is not a good fit for mouthwash, but there are people out there, we're obviously making this up, who are mouthwash experts. Let's say there's doctors let's say there's doctors who have invented the latest, you know, research behind it. That's a different sort of an endorsement. You know, we put it into that celebrity endorsement category, but it's really more of an expert endorsement, may feel more authentic. And so another thing to think about beyond the high-profile nature of it is, what do you want to communicate about the scientific side of something, or a more authentic, the more authentic side of it? How do different people that you would pick to speak on behalf of the brand or speak to the larger brand presence, how do you think that through from a strategy point of view? How do you make the most of the dollars you outlay for those people?
Fascinating stuff. Elise Glink from bestmoneymoves.com, and you can follow her at Glink on Twitter. Elise, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Have a good one.
You too. We're going to wrap things up on the Wintrust Business Lunch right after this.